Notice how some homes sell faster in your neighborhood? It's not luck. It's local know-how. RE/MAX agents know their streets, schools, and communities inside and out. And with RE/MAX, those local pros are everywhere. Which means when you're ready to buy or sell, you'll get trusted neighborhood insight that puts you a step ahead. Reach out today. RE/MAX, the experts close to home. Each office independently owned and operated.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. It may be an international break, but plenty of storylines coming out of the Championship. We talk about the managerial hot seats in the Premier League. No, I won't shut up, Andy Murray. I will continue. I will do a Fabio Fognini, and I will continue on.
Don't look at me.
Plenty of managerial hot seats to talk about. Neil Harris has resigned as the Millwall manager last week. Who will replace him at the Den? Daniel Stendel left Barnsley yesterday, so who could be replacing them? They're in the relegation zone at this moment in time. So plenty of managerial talking points over the next hour. We'll also be talking about Derby, who seem to be getting on track after a few off-field issues in the last few weeks. We'll be talking to Tony Dorigo, former Leeds defender, won the First Division with Leeds United. Very delighted to have him on the show to talk about their start to the new season. We'll also be talking about Huddersfield, who seem to be getting a little bit of momentum. Danny Cowley has won back-to-back games as they start to move up the Championship table. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Championship Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty of managerial positions to be talking about, and we usually talk about the number of Premier League managers under pressure already. Well, the Championship has plenty to talk about to compete with the Premier League at the moment. Last Thursday, we heard the news that Neil Harris had resigned as the Millwall manager. He'd been there just over 4 years, obviously spent many a year there as a player as well. And it came as a real shock to many at Millwall. They did react to that by winning 2-1 against Leeds at home on the weekend. So not a bad result for Adam Barrett, who's currently stepping in as the caretaker manager. But plenty of shock at Millwall over the last few days. And on the breakfast show this morning with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie, they were joined by Frankie Fielding, who's currently a goalkeeper at Millwall at the moment, and they were talking to him this morning about how kind of he received the news and his feelings towards the news that Neil Harris had resigned as the Millwall manager.
I was sat on the settee and one of the boys put it in the group and I couldn't believe it, to be honest. It's all come as a surprise, and we wish him absolutely the best. He's a proper bloke, top bloke, family man, pivotal in me coming to Millwall in the summer, really wanted me, which is been a first for a while. Someone actually reached out and spent time with me on the phone and told me what he expected of me and what he wanted of me, and I'm absolutely gutted, obviously, but obviously the decision came at his blessing, and we have to move on now, I suppose.
And how's the club? Like, I guess the day after, how was it going into the training ground? What were the players? What was the reaction?
Well, you know what it's like, football. You know what football's like, Rich. It's usually when someone leaves, there's a couple of lads who are happy, a couple of lads who are not so happy, and then a couple of lads who just, I mean, not what football's like, just don't really care, do they? But yeah. I tell you what, not one person in that changing room on Friday were happy at all. So just goes to show you what everyone thought about him at Millwall. And we had a team meeting between ourselves and just said that we had to move on now, because obviously we were all quite disappointed, and we had to make sure everyone was all right. And then obviously move forward. It was really disappointing, obviously, and I suppose it's football. You never know what's around the corner, and we were all very, very disappointed. Honestly, everyone was really, really disappointed.
He obviously cited that he was getting a bit of stick from just pockets of the fans. I mean, like, as a player, is that quite a hard thing to get your head around? Because obviously you guys love the fans, but you also loved your manager, didn't you?
Of course. No, we didn't even talk about that, to be honest. I'm a bit of a, I don't like social media, so I don't really you know, listen to social media, so I haven't had a clue, you know. But football fans are entitled to their opinion, and they are the football club, aren't they? Without the football fans, you don't have a football club. So, listen, I don't get involved in the politics and that side of it. I just, you know, see him, what a good bloke he is. His Millwall on his, you know, in his heart, and I'm sure he'll be back one day. I'm no doubt about that.
So that was Frankie Fielding, the current Millwall goalkeeper, that was talking to Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's on The Breakfast Show this morning about Neil Harris's resignation. Came as a bit of a surprise, but they did get all 3 points on the weekend at home against Leeds. Another manager that is left, this time sacked, I think, is more the case rather than resign. I think Millwall were never going to sack Neil Harris. But Barnsley, currently in the relegation zone, things not looking too great for them at the moment. And Daniel Stendel has left. It wasn't that long ago, actually, he was linked to the Huddersfield job. Now, Huddersfield is still not doing great, but a bit of a surprise that a club right near the bottom of the Championship was being linked with another job near the bottom of the Championship as well. So Daniel Stendel left Barnsley yesterday, and on the Sports Breakfast this morning with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by Doug O'Kane, sports editor at the Barnsley Chronicle, to give his views, and they asked him whether he was shocked at the news that Stendel had left Barnsley.
I can understand that, and I think in a way a lot of Barnsley fans were yesterday, although of course it hasn't been going brilliantly since promotion and this season. It's been tough on the pitch since the first day of the season, but also there's been a sort of a bit of a brewing sort of discontent from the fans and maybe the management as well, the coaching staff, about the way that the recruitment went in the summer, in terms of four of the regular starters from the promotion side were either sold or one left at the end of his contract. They were really big players, the two centre-backs, the top scorer and the goalkeeper, so kind of the spine of the team. And what came in to replace them was 10 very young players, all 23 or under, with very limited experience, no experience basically in the Championship, and not very much experience in.
The strategy seems to be getting young players. They do have a very specific strategy at Barnsley, where it seems to be under 24-year-olds, from what I can understand. But you made the point there that if you are going to survive and thrive in the Championship, that perhaps isn't the best strategy?
Well, yeah. It's under 25s, like you said. They have sort of veered away from that once or twice. They signed Matt Mills last time halfway through the season, and that didn't really go very well. He was a sort of centre-back in his 30s. And they have signed one or two players who are a bit older than that, but basically that is the strategy. And, yeah, obviously the argument when things aren't going well is, oh, well, it could really do with one or two experienced heads in there. If there was a sort of centre-back or centre-midfielder who's played 200 Championship games and is about 30 years old and has been there and done it, then he'd be able to help the young lads along. And yes, he wouldn't have the sell-on value that the owners cherish and that they're looking towards, sort of selling all these players on after developing them. That's their business model. But a few older players in there, while they wouldn't have that kind of sell-on value, they would add value on the pitch and help the team stay in the division, which obviously in the long run would also bring a lot more money as well. So it's a balance to strike, and I think the general opinion is that last time they probably got it just about right in the first season when they didn't sell as many players until the sort of January in the next summer, and they were managed to keep hold of most of the team. This time the team's been dismantled quite early and they've gone so young. They've gone really, really, really young. The oldest players are 24. And it just seems like at the moment they've gone a bit too far down the sort of youth way, and they haven't got enough leadership and experience in the team, which you need in the Championship.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that. The back four, an average age of 20 in the 5-1 defeat against Preston, which is, and I guess you're looking at, look, it is very early in the season. We're only, what, eight games, 10 games, something like that into the season. So it is still reasonably early. But at the same time, are you seeing any signs that Barnsley can pull themselves out of it and make a good fight of it in the Championship?
Well, it's very, like you say, there's only 11 games in, so 35 to go, more than 100 points to play for. So it's, you know, you certainly can't write them off. You can't write anyone off at this stage. They're only 2 points adrift. They could win the next game and suddenly be out of the relegation zone. But it does look tough for them at the moment at this level. They played before the Preston game. They played really well for about three or four games and just not got the points. They kept sort of playing well for 70 or 80 minutes, but losing, for example, against Leeds. Then at Nottingham Forest, they only got a point at Wigan when they were the better side with a lot of injuries. And against Derby as well, they scored an injury time equaliser, but a few defensive errors cost them in that match. So it's not quite going for them. But I think a lot of people are really disappointed by the departure of Stendel, because it seemed from last season and his sort of reputation of improving players, which we've seen last season, that he was one person who maybe could have improved these players and got them to the level where they could, even though they're very young, where they could compete in the Championship.
Is that the general consensus from the fans? Is the annoyance at the board, at the recruitment policy? What is the feeling like around Barnsley currently?
Yeah, I haven't heard one person say, I haven't asked every single fan, but I've heard a lot of fans talk about it on Twitter and on forums and stuff, and I haven't heard one of them say that they thought it was that they thought Daniel Stendel deserved to go. A few of them may have had small issues with some of his tactics and decisions, but generally their fans were in just adoring him, really, especially after last season. He's a character that you can easily get behind. The football they play is brilliant, and I think they all understood as well that he'd been given a very difficult task this season, and he's almost being asked to work miracles with the squad that he's been given, just because they're so young and inexperienced, and we can't really quite tell on the quality of them yet after 10 or 11 games. Some of them have shown glimpses of being really good, but they're obviously very young and naive and raw and inexperienced. And for him to have got this promotion team and then had about a third of it taken away from him and been given such young players in replacement for that, is I think a lot of Barnsley fans were very frustrated and felt a sympathy for him with the job he was being asked to do.
So Daniel Stendel is gone from Barnsley. Could he be making his way up to the Stadium of Light? No, not to Benfica, but to Sunderland. Could he be on his way there after Jack Ross was sacked by Sunderland? On the Martin Bell show today, Niall Bromley from the Roker Report joined Martin, and he first asked him whether it was the right time for Jack Ross to be sacked.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? I never want to see a manager getting sacked.
No.
You know, at the end of the day, the guy's lost his job. I mean, the guy moved his whole life to Sunderland, you know, bought a house there, and they all did, all the coaches, all his staff team, and, you know, really seen it as a long-term project. And, you know, he was such a up-and-coming manager. He'd done fantastic for Arbroath. He'd done fantastic for St Mirren, got them promoted, and we really thought, you know, he's ready for this next step. He plays this attacking brand of football. He's going to get the ball to their feet. We're going to be playing great football. We're going to be scoring loads of goals. We're going to be winning games. But it just didn't happen, Martin. And I don't know why. I don't know. I honestly can't pinpoint. Jack Ross could never decide his best 11 was the biggest issue. And it's so unfortunate for him. And I am good for him, but it was time to go.
Who would you like to see sort of take that role?
Oh, now, there's a question. I mean, my heart and my head say two completely different things. I honestly don't know.
I mean, Roy Keane's linked again, isn't he, for a return?
Yeah. Obviously, what Roy Keane did at the club the first time he was there was phenomenal. Got us promoted after he came in when we were 23rd in the league and won the league. It was unbelievable. But, you know, would it be wise to go back there? I mean, ultimately, it didn't work out. He does love the club. I mean, he's in his book, he's wrote about Sunderland and he thinks, you know, he's so fond of Sunderland, but I don't know. He's been out. I mean, I know he's been number twos and stuff, but he hasn't managed a club in a long, nearly 10 years. I don't know.
And what about the takeover? Because the rumours of a takeover, I suppose fans must be thinking, brilliant, you know, and now that looks like that's off as well.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, that's nothing's confirmed there. It's, you know, it was kind of a whirlwind day yesterday. Within the hour, we'll get told to take us off. Then we're told Jack Ross is sacked. And then Stuart Donald on his Twitter says that the takeover's not necessarily off. I think something's obviously happened. I don't know what. Something's happened in the club. They've either, the takeover has either fallen through or, you know, it's hit a snag or something. And the club have said, we can't wait any longer. We've just lost it the weekend 2-0 to Lincoln City. You know, we need to act now. Mm. I mean, it could be anything. I mean, the takeover could go through in the next couple of days, and then these, you know, the MSD could bring in their man. That could still happen. I mean, it's still,
Is there any waning from the fans? Like, for instance, you know, Newcastle, when they're having a bad period of time, people have started staying away from the stadium. Has that happened at Sunderland, or is it still a powerful support?
Oh, well, I mean, it's still, like, you know, we're in League One, we're hitting an average of 28,000 this season. Obviously, the stadium holds 49,000, so it still looks pretty empty. But for a League One club who's had back-to-back relegations, losing a 95th-minute goal in a playoff final, for me personally, that's still phenomenal.
Yeah.
And, you know, we follow the club. We took, I think it was 2,500 to Sheffield United in the League Cup on a Wednesday night a few weeks ago. We did the same at Burnley. You know, at the weekend at Lincoln, we had the way end was full. We take thousands everywhere we go. Bolton Wanderers, 4,000 there. You know, the fans still love it. I mean, I'm travelling from France to go to, you know, I'm going to see Wigan Wanderers away. You know, next weekend. So yeah, it's, you know, we still love it, and we'll always follow the club.
Yeah, of course.
Of course we will.
I suppose it's hard to see where you think you'll finish. I mean, obviously six at the moment. Where do you think?
I don't know. It all depends on this new manager. We've got the players. If the new manager can come in and get the players playing, if he can get Will Grigg scoring goals again, if he can get Charlie Wake, you know, being more consistent and playing well every week rather than every 3 weeks. You know, Max Power, who's won this league before. Mm. If you can get these players playing together, then, you know, we could well go automatically. Could well. If I'm looking, you know, you look at which manager we're going to bring in. Gareth Ainsworth, Daniel Stendel, who just got sacked at Barnsley. Mm. They're two managers that you look at and you think, you know, Wickham have scored loads of goals this season. Barnsley scored loads of goals last season in League One and Stendel was there. So, you know, if you get one of them two managers in, you think, you know, maybe, but
yeah,
it's a tough one.
Love
Sport. This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be turning our attention to all things Derby, and I'm delighted to say that we're joined by Richard Cusack, Midlands football writer for Reach. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Richard. It was a 2-0 win for Derby at home against Luton at Pride Park on the weekend. It seems like some of the off-field issues are starting to go away a little bit, and Philip Cocu's starting to gain a little bit of momentum on the field.
Yeah, hi, Kieran. Thanks for having me on. Certainly, I agree with what you say there about sort of the off-field issues. We all know about that. It's been well-documented what's happened. I think with Saturday's win, it kind of almost drew a line back under what's happened. Tom Lawrence played first time at Pride Park since everything had happened. Probably worth noting as well that Mason Bennett actually played for the under-23s earlier this week. So his reintegration back into the squad is also happening. But I think if you look at the table now where Derby sit, they're not far off of playoffs, and they've managed to turn it around after a poor start. They're now 5 games unbeaten. After that shocking 3-0 defeat at Brentford before the last international break, they certainly headed to this international break now on a much sounder footing.
What was the reception like for Tom Lawrence at Pride Park? Because I'm sure that Derby fans were not happy, as well as the fact that, for example, Richard Keogh is out for a huge amount of time and potentially a career-threatening injury. We don't know yet. But also the fact that it brings a bad image for Derby. It tarnishes the reputation. So how was he met by the Derby fans on the weekend? And was the fact that he scored a goal perhaps a way of trying to get back in the good books for Derby fans?
I think a lot of Derby fans have obviously accepted what's happened. They've accepted that he's a Derby player, and there are a few dissenters on social media, people who don't like to see the club playing someone who's obviously on a charge for drink driving. But you have to, I think you'll have to look past that. He's a player who he needs rehabilitation back into the side. Derby have said they're going to put him on drink aware courses, him and Mason Bennett. He's got the support of the players, certainly when he scored, as does happen, that all the fans got up and cheered that goal. I think no matter what happens, I think one of the ways that you're going to get back into the fans' good books is by scoring goals. And Lawrence, when he did celebrate, it's notable that he almost put his hands up in apology. He pointed to the badge and he put his hands up in apology almost just to say, well, you know, I know what's happened. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And hopefully this is a step in the right direction. A few people saying, but I don't know if you've seen the goal, but it was almost like a cross come shot. It caught out Luton keeper Simon Sluger. So a few people, as you would do, were saying that, oh, he was apologising because he didn't mean to score. But I took the celebration from Tom to almost just a mea culpa. You know, I'm sorry. I admit what I've done, and hopefully it's on the step to redemption almost.
He's obviously being called up or is in the squad for Wales' Euro 2020 qualifying doubleheader. Ryan Giggs said it was his hardest decision he's had to make as a manager. Were you surprised to see him in there, or do you think it's the right call that obviously the matters off the field will go its course and will do what it does, but on the field he is a professional footballer at the end of the day. That's what he does, and he should just continue to go about his normal business, and he's earned that right to be in that squad.
See, I thought that bringing Tom back into the starting 11 for the Barnsley game before the Luton match in midweek, perhaps that was a little bit too soon. I don't think Derby fans were happy with that, and obviously perhaps not the wisest move for manager Philip Cocu, because then the home fans were trying to put Tom off his game by booing and as you'd expect. With regards to his inclusion to the Wales squad, like you say, he's a professional footballer. Perhaps it might have benefited him to have the two-week break, perhaps, just to terms of everything that's happened. I certainly think that he could have probably done with the rest of the squad and the club itself, just to take stock of the events off the field and clear his head that, you know what it's like. Perhaps Ryan Giggs probably thought, well, if we leave him at home, perhaps it will just sit and fester in his mind, and he might even get himself into a bit more... He might work himself up into it at the state and stuff, so perhaps we'll just keep him integrated with the squad, keep him with the lads, and let's just try and get rehabilitated in that way. So Ryan Giggs, you know, he obviously is a player who knows the psyche of a professional footballer and a very successful one at that, more than anybody else. So there's no reason to doubt his judgment, if you ask me.
In terms of then the manager, Philip Cocu, obviously his first season in charge at Derby, do you think that he is starting to get things right? He's starting to implement what he really does want to. I mean, Derby haven't lost in the league, I think, since the end of August, when he described their display away at Brentford as an arrogant display. So do you think that even though they're not winning every game at the moment, the fact that they are going unbeaten, that they are starting to get a run of games where they're building this confidence, will serve them well post the international break?
I definitely think so. And you can even look back to the game at Barnsley where they conceded a last-minute equaliser. That would have been free. If they'd have won that one, they'd have won the Birmingham game, Barnsley and Luton. OK, Luton, they did not play very well, Derby, it has to be said. But that they were gifted two goals by Simon Sluger. I don't know if you've seen the highlights where a classic, it'll make own goals and gaps if they ever release another one, where he fails to trap a back pass from his centre, from his right-back. And it just rolls underneath his net, and that gives all the impetus from the off, really. I mean, so they were gifted that there. But if you look at the table now, you know, Derby are not far off the playoff spots. They're currently sitting 13th. They've got, you know, 15 points. If they'd have won that Barnsley game, they'd only be a point off Cheltenham 10th, and then Bristol City are in 6th with 20 points. So Cocu started to get his message across, I think. Certainly when he dug the players out after the Brentford game, that's definitely hit home. Because as I said before, they're unbeaten since that Brentford match. They've got a tough run of fixtures coming up now. They've got to go to Charlton on their return from international break, and then they play Wigan at home. Then the fixtures start getting tougher. But I think they play Middlesbrough a couple of games after that. So you're looking and thinking, OK, can they keep up the run of form that they're on now? But certainly, Philip Cocu is certainly doing something right. And... you know, it shows in the results now, because Derby are on a very good run of form.
And just finally then, Richard, do you think that the international break comes at a good or a bad time for Derby, and looking after it? You mentioned that game away at Charlton. Is it? Do you see it being kind of not a crunch time for Derby, but a real test of how much progress, how far they are going under Philip Cocu?
Definitely. I think home games against Luton and away games at Barnsley, Barnsley just sat the manager, haven't they? With all due respect, they're not going to tell you a great deal about the state of this current Derby side. But with regards to the international break coming at a good or bad time, one person who it's certainly not come at a good time for is Graham Shinney, who's had to wait an eternity, it feels like, for his league debut for Derby. And he was absolutely fantastic on Saturday, the summer signing from Aberdeen, who's been limited to Carabao Cup outings and thus far. The injury to Tom Huddleston at Barnsley in midweek has opened the door for Shinny, and he will really be hoping that he can keep his place in the team. So, but I mean, the rest of the players will obviously be glad for a bit of a break after the emotional trauma of what's happened over the last couple of weeks, certainly. But we're going to see who the real Derby are when the international break comes back, I think.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Richard. That was Richard Cusack, Midlands football writer for Reach, talking about, obviously, it's been a tough couple of months for Derby off the field. But on the field, it does feel like Cocu is starting to gain a little bit of momentum, starting to get on a bit of a run, and the confidence is coming back a little bit. Obviously, wouldn't have been helped by the off-field matters, but it does feel like Cocu is starting to make a little bit of progress. Obviously, they've got Wayne Rooney coming in January. What do Derby fans think of Wazza's upcoming arrival at Derby in the January transfer window? We're going to be turning our attention to Leeds. We'll be joined by a Leeds legend, so don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're now joined by a Leeds legend. We're joined by former defender Tony Dorigo. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Tony. Looking back at the weekend, it was a 2-1 loss to managerless Millwall after Gaetano Berardi was sent off early on. He's won, appeared against that. Does that kind of bug you that, of course, there's no consolation to Leeds that has been overturned, and Bielsa will be looking at it and thinking that really should have been a three-pointer on Saturday?
Yeah, I think it's frustrating. Clearly, when referees make a mistake, you hope that over the season it will even itself out. But yeah, it was so early on in the game as well. I think it was about the 14th minute, penalty and the man being wrongly sent off. Seems double jeopardy to me, but it was incorrect. Overturned late, it doesn't help much, does it? So yeah, Marcelo Bielsa will be disappointed. I think the way that the boys played was really impressive after that. They responded well, but just couldn't quite do enough. And Millwall, they fought to the absolute end and got their 3 points. But yeah, another one, I suppose, a performance for Leeds this season where, a bit of an excuse, I say, that, we really should have probably got something out of the game. But, for whatever reason, we didn't.
After 11 games then, Tony, Leeds are fifth on 20 points. They're just 2 points off the top. Is the start of the season what you would have expected? At times, the home form has been a little bit shaky at Elland Road. So are Leeds where you thought they would be, or do you think, or were you expecting them to be slightly kind of further ahead, a few more points than they have currently?
I think what you're looking at in the Championship now is a lot of teams that are very similar in ability. I thought if there was going to be a team that could have certainly run away with it, it would have been Leeds. And I think if you look back to the performances and the amount of, I suppose, opportunities, a goal that all the teams have had, Leeds are by far and away, out there on top. But it doesn't matter how much possession you have and how many shots on target you have. You have to stick it in the back of the net. And that's where I think they've kind of let themselves down a little bit, or, and can improve. I suppose that's a good sign in that there's plenty more to come. But I thought at the start of the season, we'd be right up there, absolutely. Simply because we had another year, I think, of Marcelo Bielsa and, had that understanding right from the off. Not too much change, add one or two good players. So I thought we should have been, kind of near the top. And we are, only 2 points off the top, but still a few teams in between us. And I think there's, improvements can be made, and that will take us, a lot closer to that top position.
I wanted to get your views, Tony, on the players up front for Leeds. Eddie Nketiah signed on loan from Arsenal and made quite an impression since he signed. Also, Patrick Bamford, I see today that you've been talking about kind of some of the booing that the small section of Leeds fans have been directing at Bamford, and your view is it's not really helpful. Why is it that you think that some Leeds fans haven't really taken to Bamford? Why are they so critical of him, and what would be your response to those small section of Leeds fans that aren't his biggest fans?
Well, I think he's an easy target simply because he's the number nine. He has missed a few chances, but every single striker who plays up top misses chances. That's the nature of the game. He's a very strong character, and he comes back and he's put in some fantastic performances. I think he gives 100%, and I think he's a real team player. But of course, it is about goals as well, and so that's where the fans can get a little bit frustrated. But it shouldn't only be down to Bamford. There's lots of other players out there, the wide men, the midfielders, the centre halves that can help with that scoring. I think as well, when you see a team and play so well, but not get the reward. You know, they get frustrated, and you know, I completely understand that. But I think my point was about you know, booing your own player. And I say that it's a tiny, tiny little minority, and it was actually last season that it was only one instance. And it's not only Leeds, you know, all the clubs, certainly in the UK, and then you go abroad. I mean, for goodness sake, Real Madrid, you know, they're crazy for doing that sort of thing. So it's not aimed at anything in particular, but it was more speaking about that, you know, how to help your players rather than hinder them. Because, you know, in my experience of playing, and when I have heard it directed to some of my teammates, it doesn't help anyone, like no one whatsoever, the team, you know, the player themselves. So it's just something that I thought, you know, is to speak up about, because I think Bamford, you know, is doing a great job, and we've got to hope that the goals will eventually, you know, flow in absolute bucketfuls.
Do you think, Tony, that the international break comes at a pretty decent time for Leeds? Obviously, off the back of that 2-1 loss against Millwall, they did beat West Brom at Elland Road, one of the big games in the Championship midweek last week. But that was after losses against a loss against Charlton and a draw against Derby. So, in some ways, is this a good time for Bielsa's team to have a 2-week break to reassess and go again?
I think when I was playing, I'd always say no. I think once you've had a you know, a result that you feel you were hard done to, or you want to get out there and you know, put it right. So I would say no, but of course, nowadays with these international breaks as well, how many there is, you know, you've got to just get on with it, really. So time to rest, recharge, and hopefully the boys that go away will come back, you know, 100% fit. But no, I always like to, you know, get another game under your belt, you know, as soon as possible, really.
I wanted to get your views, Tony, on one of your other former clubs. You played for Chelsea, obviously, for 4 years before going to Leeds. And we've seen a number of Chelsea's youngsters break into the England squad. Mason Mount's in there, Tammy Abraham, and Fikayo Tomori has earned a first call-up into that squad. How impressed have you been by that trio in particular in the Chelsea team this season? And do you see them playing a big part, not just for Chelsea, but for England this season as well?
You know what, I'm actually delighted that you know, clubs like Chelsea are giving their youngsters a go. I always look at you know, the local homegrown talent, and the fans absolutely love it. You know, they love one of their own to come through their academy and play in that first team. And it's been difficult at the big clubs. I understand why, because, you know, certainly managers can't wait for these players to mature. They've got to hit the ground running. You know, they're only 3-4 bad results away from the sack. So I get all that, but you look at the Chelsea youth teams, FA Cup winning youth teams that they've had over the season. You think surely there's got to be some kids in there that can you know, go all the way. And of course, with what's happened with Frank coming back, they've had their chance, which I think is fantastic. And we're seeing, you're right, you know, Abraham, Mason Mount, or you know, they're doing wonderfully well. But of course, they've had to go away to Championship clubs to get that experience initially. But I'm delighted they're back there. And you know, you keep looking down at the results each you know, weekend, and you know, they're scoring, and I think it's wonderful. So yeah, I think for them to come through at the same time is another really big positive, not only for Chelsea but for England as well. You know, are they the finished article? No, but I tell you what, they're getting the opportunity to show what they can do, and already they're at such a high standard that they can only get better.
And just finally, Tony, you made the move over to Italy to play for Torino 30 times after leaving Leeds. Do you think we're going to see more and more, not just young English players, but English players in general move abroad? Because obviously Jadon Sancho was the first young English player to make that bold move to go to Dortmund. We've seen Kieran Trippier, for example, a more experienced, older player, going to Atletico Madrid over the summer as well. Do you think more players are going to look at it, whether they're 18 or 27, and look at it and think, actually, I can make a real go of it elsewhere and go out to Europe and test myself in other European leagues?
I think you're absolutely right, and I think it will be both ends of the scale as well. And I would certainly look at you know, any player that wants to kind of develop and get himself educated in life, not only football, but certainly I think from a footballing point of view, you know, it's hugely beneficial. It really is. I love my time there. My big regret, I suppose, I went there when I was 23 rather than, I suppose, more at the peak of my career, just to, you know, to play in a different environment and learn different things. Now, Kieran Trippier will do, you know, fantastic. He's doing fantastic out there. But it's the youngsters where you're obviously talking about Sancho and others, you know, having to go abroad. And that's where, at the moment, what you need is those good young players to getting exposed, I think, at the right level of football at the right time. Now, if you can't do that in the UK, then what a fantastic choice you've got is to get over in one of the European leagues and do it there. And so what we do know now, you can do well there and come back to the Premier League if that's what you want to do, yeah, and play for the big teams as well. So I would certainly encourage anyone that isn't quite sure to get out there, give it a go. And in the long run, I think it'll be a really good move.
Great bit of advice. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Tony. That was Tony Dorigo, a Leeds legend. Obviously won the first division title with Leeds back in the early 90s. So really interesting to get his views, not just on Leeds, but also obviously having played for Chelsea as well, to get his views on some of those youngsters that have broken in to the England setup, as well as I said, Tony talked about his experience abroad over in Italy with Torino. It was only for a year, made 30 appearances. I mean, I should have told him this, that this will make him feel old, that he spent his year out in Torino in the year that I was born. Quite old Tony might feel if he heard me say that, but really kind of waxing lyrical, really talking up playing abroad. And I've always been a big advocate of players testing themselves, because I think there's always been this fear about going abroad. It is a big culture shock. It's a big language shock, and it's not easy. And I don't think anyone would try and claim otherwise, that it's just an easy transition to move from your home in southwest England, in the northeast of England, over to Spain or to Italy. It isn't easy, but actually what you can see, and this used to be in thing in you go back to the 80s and the 90s, you think of Love Sport's very own Luther Blissett made the move from Watford over to AC Milan. The late Ray Wilkins played over in Milan with AC as well. Ian Rush went to Juventus. They didn't necessarily spend a huge amount of time out there, but actually going out and testing yourself in a foreign league can be massively beneficial. And what we are seeing is that different ages are going out there. It's not just, for example, German clubs seeking out young English talent, whether it be Jadon Sancho going to Dortmund, Reece Nelson spending a season on loan at Hoffenheim, Emil Smith-Rowe going on a loan to Leipzig, Reece Oxford is now at Augsburg. It's not just young English talent that's being sought after so greatly by foreign clubs. It's also players like Kieran Trippier that have gone out to Atletico Madrid, Aaron Ramsey from a Welsh point of view going out to Juventus following the lead of Gareth Bale making the move to Real Madrid. So we're seeing it more and more of players, British players, not just young players at the age of 17, 18, but more experienced older guys are going out, testing themselves abroad. And that's massively beneficial, not just for them as an individual, but for English or British football to have players test themselves, because learning, playing in a different league, Jadon Sancho would have learned a huge amount going out to play for Borussia Dortmund. I think he'll probably end up back in the Premier League next season, but he would have learned so much, and he is gone to another level. He is now an elite young player, arguably the best at his age at the moment in world football, and that's a massive result of going out there, testing yourself abroad, taking that difficult decision and taking a bit of a risk and going out there. And Tony was really talking that up, really praising players for going out there, and said how his experience over in Italy was a massively beneficial for one. So many thanks to Tony Dorigo for joining us this afternoon to not just talk about Leeds, but also talking about experiences going abroad away from home. If you want to get in contact with us, what's your view on players, British players going abroad? Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we'll be talking all things Huddersfield.
Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, how's your Championship club going at the moment? How do you feel going into the second international break? Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure, if you want to share your views, we want to hear from you this afternoon about how your club is faring at the start of this season. Obviously, we head into this second international break, 11 games into the season. High flyers at the moment, West Brom and Nottingham Forest, joint top on 22 points. It is really, really tight, though. I mean, you think from Millwall in 15th to West Brom at the top, there's just 8 points. So not a lot of difference between those sides. We're going to be focusing on a side near the bottom, but they are out of the relegation zone now. And I'm sure our next guest will be slightly happier than maybe he was a few weeks ago. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Neil Wayne from the And He Takes That Chance podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Neil. You're out of the relegation zone now, so surely there must be a little bit of positivity amongst Huddersfield fans at the moment.
It's a stark contrast to even just a week ago, to be honest. Just shows you that the power of two wins in 5 days, and you can definitely see the work of the Cowl is paying off, and I think it's a really good coup getting those two in. They're very, very good so far.
it's the first time, Neil, that since February 2018 that Huddersfield have had back-to-back wins. Do you feel like the momentum is starting to build? It took a little bit of time. It took a few weeks under Danny Cowley, but it does feel like over the last two, three, four games that he is starting to implement what he wants, and Huddersfield are starting to gain a little bit of confidence, get that winning feeling back, and the momentum is starting to roll.
Yeah, it was. I'll be honest, the game at Stoke that we won last Tuesday was a woeful game of football. It was awful. But the end justified the means. We got there. He made a couple of clever substitutions, went all out pace for sort of the last 15 minutes when Stoke were tiring, and we got them on break and it paid off. But as a game, a spectacle for others, not much, but for the town fans that were there on the night, brilliant. And Saturday, really good game against Hull, really good game plan, set up really well. And it just shows you that it's not all about going and spending millions, because the sort of the key men for us at the moment are, you know, Carlin. I've mentioned Carlin Grant more than once on this show. He's proving to be an absolute bargain at, you know, 1.5-2 million quid. The real standout at the moment was an academy player that was on loan at Bradford last season called Lewis O'Brien. Really, really good.
As you mentioned, another goal for Carlin Grant at the weekend in Huddersfield's 3-0 win against Hull City. Are you a little bit worried that there'll be other Championship clubs sniffing around him, or do you think that actually he can see the project under Danny Cowley? He scored 6, playing well, and he will want to continue at Huddersfield rather than potentially be tempted away in January.
There's going to be teams looking. Why wouldn't there? You know, he scored 6 goals in a team that couldn't score goals for anything. You know, he had a good end to the Premier League season last season in a poor team. Started really well this season in a poor team up to the last few games. He's actually played a couple of games sort of wide left of the front three, which is a little bit different, but still managed to get an assist and a goal. Went central on Saturday and got his goal. Link-up play is getting better and better. So, bids will come. There's no doubt about that, but hopefully for us, you know, if we can start building on this last couple of weeks and get a few more wins, you might just see a lot of longer-term project with the Cowleys.
One thing that Danny Cowley said after the game was how he was trying to reconnect with the supporters and the players are fighting for the cause. Do you think that may have been a slight problem that crept in at Huddersfield, is that the fans had lost that kind of love of it? Because it isn't easy when you're not seeing your team winning every week and you're not seeing your team score a lot of goals. So do you think that's one of the key things, is that unity between players and the fans? When things are going tough, it's difficult to do that. But one thing that Danny Cowley is really trying hard to do is to reconnect the fans with the players.
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. I mean, when David Wagner arrived, that was sort of the key thing that he did. He united the whole club. And to be honest, the fans have stayed with the club unbelievably well over this sort of last 18 months when we've won 4 games out of, up until last 2, it was about 4 games out of 60. So to still be getting sort of 20,000 plus, and for those fans to still be vocal, is phenomenal. I think the appointment of Jan Sievert was clearly wrong. I said it at the time. It was just the wrong appointment. I think we tried to replicate what Wagner had done, getting the same sort of, well, going back, we got the Dortmund 2 manager again. If they try to recreate what they'd already done, then lightning doesn't strike twice. So Sievert was a mistake. He sort of alienated the fans. He was very sort of bullish and came across just poorly. Never actually did any Q&As with the fans, which Wagner was brilliant at. That's the first thing he did when he arrived. And Danny Cowley has got one arranged for next week. And already the Cowleys are very, very popular. It's a great appointment.
Another thing that Danny Cowley picked up on, an important thing as well, as the fact that Huddersfield scored 3 on the weekend. It was back-to-back clean sheets. So how is he improving Huddersfield defensively? And as a Liverpool fan, I'm keen to get your views on Kamil Grabara, who's on loan currently at Huddersfield. It must be a confidence boost for him as well to get back-to-back clean sheets for him as well.
Yeah, I mean, I feel a bit sorry for him playing behind, you know, a team that's struggling. That's never easy for a goalkeeper, especially a young one trying to make his mark in England. It was at fault for Millwall's equaliser, just got underneath a cross and dropped it, and Matt Smith had an easy tap in for Millwall. But other than that, he's been pretty solid. You know, he's learning the game, but he's definitely our number one for the season. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I think one of the biggest things that the Cowleys have managed to do with the backing of the chairman is getting Danny Simpson, who was at Leicester. He's come in, and it's no coincidence that in the three games he's been here, we've drawn 1-1-2, kept only let one goal in. He's sort of solidified that back four. Tommy Elphick has stepped up. Now he's got a proper right back alongside him. It's sort of gone across the whole back four. We've got a young kid at left back who we got from Tottenham last year. He got released there, a lad called Jaden Brown, and he's getting better and better every week. So the back four's looking really, really solid at the moment. So yes, but Danny Simpson's very much key to that.
And just finally then, Neil, after back-to-back wins, post the international break, is it a great opportunity? When you look at the fixtures, obviously there's never an easy fixture, but you look at it, away at Blackburn, then two home games against Middlesbrough and Barnsley, who are right with Huddersfield near the bottom. Is this a great opportunity for Danny Cowley to really build this momentum post the international break? And as the Championship always is, Huddersfield get two or three wins on the bounce, they can find themselves in mid-table and suddenly relegation seems like a distant memory.
Yeah, I mean, I'll stick my neck out now. They won't go down. Not with these two in charge. They are very, very impressive. But like you say, on the back of two wins, if you're looking at three fixtures, we've got to pick one away and two at home. You probably won't be far off picking Blackburn away and these two at home. So it's a massive opportunity. If we can get another 7 points to back up the seven we're taking out of the last three, I think that'll set us up for a decent season going forward.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Neil. That was Neil Wayne from Annie Takes His Chance podcast, talking about all things Huddersfield, and things do look more optimistic now for Huddersfield. I said at the time how it was a really good appointment of Danny Cowley at that time, and I'm sure that as Neil said, he's absolutely delighted with his appointment, and said that Huddersfield won't go down, that the right man's at the helm now, and they will be pretty happy with how things are going now. Things look a lot better than they did perhaps even 7 days ago. That back-to-back wins for Huddersfield for the first time since February 2018 certainly changes the mood at Huddersfield. And that run afterwards, away to Blackburn, at home against Middlesbrough and home against Barnsley, you're probably looking at Huddersfield 7 points. I think they'll be targeting from those 9 points. And then, as we know with the Championship, you get a couple of wins, you can move up four or five places. Obviously, conversely, two losses, you find yourself dropping down the table. But I'm sure that things are looking a lot better for Huddersfield than they were even 1 week, 2 weeks ago.
This is Love Sport.
Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.